All right, welcome back, Preacher in the Hat. This is episode 6. Y'all want to talk a little baseball?
Let's talk some baseball. All
right, I'm gonna talk a little baseball. I'm gonna test your knowledge here.
Well, bring it.
Let's go. Career all-time home run leaders. All right.
Okay.
There are number of guys who have hit more than 600. Any guesses?
Five.
It's either 5 or 6.
It's actually 9.
Huh.
All right. So, which leads into the next question, which we're now sure to get wrong, is can you name any number of the 9? So together.
Yeah.
Okay. A few of them. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So we got Barry Bonds.
Yeah. All right. Reluctantly.
Yeah. Henry Aaron.
Henry Aaron.
Yeah. Babe Ruth. Willie Mays, was he the one who hit 600 on the dot? Somebody hit 600 on the dot.
Willie Mays hit 660.
Okay.
Alex Rodriguez.
That's 5.
Sammy Sosa.
And Pujols just got there this year, right?
That's 7.
7. Let me think. Old school, new school.
One of them you're going to be really mad you haven't gotten yet. Oh.
Mark McGwire?
Nope.
No, he didn't. He just hit individual season.
McGwire hit 583.
Okay.
Ah, yeah, okay. He fell a little short.
Mickey Mantle? No, Mickey Mantle.
No, this is starting to get bad. They're gonna label you baseball casuals if you don't get this.
I've forgotten way more about baseball record books than I remember right now.
You guys used to be able to memorize.
This
statistics.
Would not. This would have taken. This used to, 20 years ago. This would have taken.
I'm gonna
10
say.
Seconds.
There's one that I'm. There's one that I'm not gonna hold. That nobody's gonna hold against you. That you're not gonna get.
Well,
you're probably not gonna get it. But this other one, like.
Oh, drop some teams on us.
I can't. You'll get it right away.
Oh, well, on the tougher one.
I don't know if I want to do all that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think you'll get them. These are fairly, these guys played in my lifetime. Okay, both of them played in my lifetime. All right, so far you got Bonds, Aaron, Ruth, Pujols, A-Rod, Mays, and Sammy Sosa. You're missing numbers 7 and 8 on the home run list. Sosa coming in at 9 with 609.
Palmeiro?
No. There are people screaming at their devices right now. No. Like
Eddie Matthews didn't play in our life.
That's true.
There are people absolutely like they might have cut it off.
Well, go ahead. Give us a clue because we're not getting.
All right, we're gonna run out of time here. Yeah. So I'm gonna go ahead and give you. I'm gonna give you the. You want the obvious one first?
Yeah. I'm scared that you're saying it's obvious.
Ken Griffey.
Yeah, well,
okay.
Ken Griffey Jr., 630. Hopefully we didn't lose too many listeners just then.
Seattle will probably
I apologize to the kid.
Yes. Apologies to the kid. The sweetest swing of all time, arguably.
By far.
All right. And then the other one that no one would hold against you actually coming in at number 8 was 612 was Jim Thome.
I would have never
had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know he hit that many either. I thought it was in the 500s.
Well, I know you could hit a bomb.
Just outside 600, rounding out the top 10 is Frank Robinson with 586. Mark McGwire with 583. By far the fewest plate appearances to get to that type of number. I think we know why, but we'll move on from there. So we are going to talk a little bit of among those home run giants, right?
Yes. Hey.
He's been waiting to talk.
I know. We got a mountain of text messages, Derek and I did, today from Dad as he was digging through his memory file to share about this one today. So...
And I didn't even have to dig deep, man. That thing's on the top layer.
So we knew you were going to be prepared. And if you remember last episode, yeah. We already had the jacket up here.
Yeah.
And I think, some people who maybe are familiar with this sort of thing, with you in particular, probably, they kind of knew what was coming.
Yeah.
But I don't know. How do we want to get into that? Let's
hear the home run.
Yeah.
Let's jump in.
We'll just kick it
off. So here we have on my left the Miller County Pirate jacket that I got from playing 4 years of varsity baseball for the Miller County Pirates from 1972 to 1975. 72 season, 73, 74, and 75. 75 was, of course, my senior year. In case anyone wonders, this all can be documented right here in this beautiful annual of the 1975.
Is there a stat line?
Not publicly
available. No stat lines there. However, one of the highlights of that season was that this was a team that I played on for 4 years, started all 4 years. That's not much, very impressive, by the way. But as a freshman, I started. But we're kind of going to jump to the senior year first, and then we'll go backwards.
Thank goodness. Like.
So in my senior year, we played baseball. We didn't play near as many games as high school people do today, but we played probably 11 games, and we were 3-8 in my senior year. Now, to the rest of you, that sounds like a very poor season. But what I'm here to tell you was, it was the best season that I played in, 3-8. So 3 was our top winning year, 3-8. In one of those wins in 1975, this senior stepped up to the plate, all 5'7", 135 pounds of him. This singles hitter, who was known to bunt, get a base on balls pretty fast, very seldom ever hit a double, don't know if I ever hit a triple. But the guy from the Seminole Indians, which is our arch rival, threw me a pitch right down the heart of the plate. Now, my coach, later in the week, after it was all over, said, some of the people that play on our team are so lucky that all they have to do is put their bat out and the ball hits it and goes over the fence. Well, well, well. Thank you, coach. I appreciate that. You're such an encourager. However, I did. I swung that ball right down from down the plate, and 300, depending on who's talking, 310 or 320 feet later, it landed over the left center field fence at Pirate Field.
How far out was that to center, Georgia?
Center was even further. Left center, it was towards center. It was more towards center than left. But you were there. I got to show it to you.
Very short fences.
Yeah. Very. Now, the fence was not high.
Oh, no,
but
no.
But the ball went on a beautiful. Can we get this, Mr. Producer? The ball went on a beautiful arc like that.
That'll be one down, and it's going to bring Steve Longenecker to the plate. Steve framed a nice curveball to end the top half and got a chance to do some damage here. Working quickly now, it's a ball low and away. Beautiful sunny day here in South Georgia. Just an absolutely perfect afternoon for baseball. Wind in, the 1-0 pitch is swung on and pounded to deep left center. It's got a chance, and it's gone! Unbelievable! Steve Longenecker just put the Miller County Pirates on the board! Oh, that one, you got to see to believe it, folks.
And flew out of the ballpark. To say I was stunned would probably be an understatement, because it's just not anything that ever happened. I never came close to hitting a ball out. How did I hit it out? I still don't know, but I hit it out, and it happened. And we won the game. Not necessarily a walk-off homer, although this story would be much more interesting if I were to kind of put all that in. But then I'd be embellishing it, or lying, as the case may be, and I won't do that.
Yeah. My first home run came in an adult men's wiffle ball league in my early 30s. So
that's
hit it about 97 feet.
Yeah, whatever those
something
fences
like
are.
That.
Not 310. Ah. there we go. Yeah,
different bat and ball, you know what I'm saying?
So what do you think my reaction was when that happened? Now, you didn't know me back then, obviously, but you know me pretty good, and I wasn't that different than I am now. How do you think I reacted to that home run?
I think you were stunned, but then also I think you let some people know about it after.
Oh, yeah, forever. Yeah.
I'm talking about now.
Now, the saddest part about that episode was, is my dad, who was worked as a market manager, he was coming from work, and it was a late afternoon game, and he normally couldn't make those too much. He came like one or two innings late. He did not get to see my only home run.
Bummer.
He was one of my best encouragers. And Paul was, but he was not there. But when he came on the scene, it's a small town.
Oh, yeah.
When he drove up, everybody let him know immediately that I hit it. So he has to go based upon my story and the story of the fans that saw it. But it was a real experience. I think, though, that home run, and I've told this story in sermons. I have to say it like every decade or, you know, every 5 years or something, because there might be new people that haven't heard it yet.
Yeah.
And to me...
And let me tell you, it's can't miss.
Yeah.
So we were thinking about what would we entitle this episode. I kind of call it Miracles Happen. That's what it was. It was really a miracle. I mean, it's hard to explain it from a natural standpoint because it never happened before, and it hasn't. And contrary to your experience, I've never hit a ball out in wiffle ball. Yeah, so there you go. There you have it.
So the funniest thing about Dad's baseball stories for me that he would tell when we were growing up was not, the home run story wasn't one of my favorites. I don't know why you're always drawn to like why are you always drawn to someone's like pain and anguish instead of joy?
Yeah. What's up with
you that? And was the I always remember the records, like the winless season and the game that you guys lost 32-3.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that just briefly. So my freshman year, we didn't have any returning starters. I got to start. Obviously, I think it was because I was breathing maybe.
Yeah.
That might be why I got to start.
Warm body.
Warm body. I was a little scrappy ball player, so I wasn't bad. But, you know, in that game, we played a team that eventually went on. They were like two divisions above us. And we played them in Blakely, Georgia is where it was. It happened in Blakely, Georgia, for anybody who knows where that is, southwest Georgia, only about 30 miles from my house. And we went down there to play them, and this team was really good. They were like a well-oiled machine. And here we were rolling up in there and didn't have anything to speak of. We didn't have pitching, obviously, because the final score, mercifully the game ended, was 32-3. I do like to brag a little bit. Of the three runs that scored, I was involved in all three of them.
Did they not have mercy rule back then?
Apparently not.
Okay.
Or I don't know. They might have scored 32 in two innings.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not if it came back around to you three times.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
So I was on base. Either on base or drove in. I think I drove in one of the runs and scored two of the other ones. I was on base. So that was the beginning of an illustrious career in baseball, in high school baseball for me for the next 4 years. That year we were 0-8. Obviously, we didn't even play 11 games that year or 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a small amount of games.
It was a small amount of games.
Have you,
but you know, when you're losing like that, that's a mercy thing for you, actually.
I'm trying to think, have you ever been on like on a team like that? Like, have you or I ever been on a team like that where it's just like, I know, I remember, and not to just like dwell on the baseball stuff for so long, but I know we played on an all-star team 1 year that won like no games, something like that.
Yeah.
But that's just like a quick thing, like five or six games at the most.
I've watched you play on your teams. You never played on a team like mine.
Yeah.
Period.
I believe it.
Okay. I was in both of the... I was an observer on your team, a participant. Believe me, you never played on a team like I played on. Now, there were some good players on our team. Interestingly, and this is kind of a social statement maybe, but during that time is when the schools were integrated between blacks and whites. And so in my second year, I think it was, perhaps we started playing with some teams, and the guys that came over from the all-black school, and they had a guy named Mac Allen, who was this guy could really pitch. And I had a lot of fun catching this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was known to be a star. Unfortunately, their coming and being a part of our team did not really raise our record very much, yeah. Although I did get to play with some really good players in some of the years that I was there. My senior year, we played with a guy who actually went on into the minors, cool. In college and minors. He was a freshman and I was a senior. I was his catcher. Yeah. And it was fun to watch, to catch Tim. I love doing that. So along the way, even though we lost, we had moments. There were moments of really a lot of satisfaction for me on an individual level.
That's cool. So obviously, like, have you ever been in a situation like that and not just, you know, not just on a sports team, but like, kind of being, you kind of, you know, like you made mention of the, you know, the game where you lose by 29 runs, but you scored three, you know, had a hand in the three that you scored. And, like, what would you say, and I know I'm switching gears here pretty abruptly, but like, what would you say to, someone in that same situation who maybe feels a little bit alone, like that? And that's not to say, you know, that other people around you on your, you know, on a baseball team weren't trying, but to kind of draw the parallel, like, what would you say to a pastor or a church leader in 2024 who feels like they're the only one pulling weight? That doesn't mean they're the only one pulling weight.
They feel like it.
But I think you know as good as anybody how that can feel lonely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if there are people around you.
Well, first of all, you have to get over the idea of calling or thinking about each other as losers. Once you start that, then you're not of any good to the team or anything. For example, if you think that you are better than everybody else on the team, then you start saying, well, I'm playing with a bunch of losers, and you lose interest in it if you're not careful. So you have to say, I'm in this team, I'm playing my part, but together we're not winning. I may feel like I'm winning individually in some moments, but you have to say we're not, and I have a responsibility along with everybody else. In other words, when it's a team sport, you know, it's not about does the individual person shine. It's not about that I scored three runs. That was not a lot of great solace to me, honestly. I mean, when you get pounded 32-3, you don't say, well, at least I just told you, at least I scored, you know, that kind of thing. That didn't mean, I mean, somebody drove me in, you know, somebody did this, somebody did that. So you have to, the first thing is you have to just quit thinking I'm a loser and everybody else is a loser. Not easy to do sometimes. So when I would go to school sometimes with my jacket on, you know how high schoolers are.
Ugh.
They would look at you and you know what they'd say? Why are you identifying yourself with that team? In those days, we had pretty good football teams, and we had a girls' basketball team with a classmate of mine who went on to Auburn in basketball. She scored 10,000 points in Auburn basketball. She's well known. Her name was Marianne Merritt. She was a terrific basketball player. So they would have winning seasons time after time. And then right after the girls' basketball and the guys' basketball, who was winning, here we come.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're the next thing. And so we were not representing very well in the eyes of our school. And so if I'd be wearing this jacket, which I was kind of proud of being able to do it, it felt like an individual accomplishment. But then other people would make fun of you for identifying with, in their minds, a bunch of losers. Mm-hmm. And so let's take it to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a group of people in a ministry and so forth, and there don't seem to be a lot of wins as a team, you have to be careful. You don't start looking around and saying, are we all losers? Just because other people say, well, I can't believe your church is that small. I can't believe your ministry doesn't have the impact that our large ministry does. Y'all aren't scoring any runs. Who's hit a home run lately? You know, I'm talking about now in ministry terms. What's a home run in ministry terms? What's a home run in business terms? Mm-hmm. What's this? And so the first thing that I would say is be sure not to identify yourself as a loser, you know, and be sure not to not to look at other people as losers. That's the first step in being able to stay focused in what you're called to do, the game you're called to play, the ministry you're called to be in.
What about the concept in a team sports setting? Like they always talk about a lot of players who made the people around them better. Like, yeah. To what level is that your responsibility? Because, I mean, you can think of examples, guys who played, you know, they'd play with Michael Jordan or they'd play with Tom Brady or something like that. And then they go to another team and they're like, well, what's wrong with this guy? Like, we thought he was this. And really it was like those other guys, like they elevated the people around them. So in that context, you know, is there some of that responsibility where, particularly in a leadership role, what's the impetus for us to, you know, or for people to bring others up, you know?
Well, first of all, you need to be willing to play any position.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it's your favorite position or not. So one of the things I did in baseball was I played a lot of different positions. My two major positions were catcher and shortstop. I liked catching more than I did anything else, but I didn't always do it because sometimes we had somebody who could catch equally well or better than I could, but I needed to be at shortstop. There were sometimes I played second base through the years. There were sometimes I played third, and occasionally I did spot relief in pitching. Can you believe that? I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, like, I never was a pitcher. I never even practiced in prep, but the coach would call me in from third. I remember one time we were in a game. He called me in from third base and said, come on, I struck out the side. Can you believe that, man? I mean, so it was crazy. I mean, like, when he called me over there, I was like, I haven't even practiced this. But I could have balked and said, no, I won't do it. But instead, I got in there and did the very best I can. I think that's how you make people better. You do the very best you can with what you have. And then you hope your example is they'll have the same example saying, I want to do whatever I can for the team in order to strengthen the team. I think that's how you make them better.
I think some of it, too, like you look at what Jesus did with the people that he had is, He gave them instruction. He gave them, you know, trusted. I'm not saying like he delegated. If you don't do it, then I got to do it kind of thing. But it was more for like their personal growth and things like that. But I feel like that's something that we should be. Should emulate, and which is kind of where my question came from, or where, you know, kind of the reason for my question, because it can kind of get lost where you get into that mode of, I'm the only one who's doing anything with however you define success. So then it just becomes, well, I'll just do everything myself, or I don't trust anybody else to do it. And I think, you know, we have such good examples of Jesus doing the opposite of that.
Well, you know, really, not only was he on a team that a lot of people thought was losing, he chose the team that a lot of people thought were losers. Oh, yeah. I mean, in his culture, the people he chose were not seen. First of all, they weren't, the way I understand it, I can be corrected, and please correct me if you need to. But the way I understand it is these were guys, if they were fishermen and so forth, because they didn't make the cut to be a rabbi.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they didn't make the cut to be a rabbi. They didn't make a cut to do this. And so they were tax collectors when he called them. There was Simon the Zealot, who was a right-wing politician, probably. There was Matthew there. There was Peter, who was a fisherman. Now, he was a pretty successful fisherman, we think. If you go to Israel, you'll see over there that he probably had a fleet of ships, boats, where he did fishing with. So he was not just a one horse out here with a, you know, with one little single net, he probably ran it. So they had some success, but they had not made the cut relative to anything, if I could use the phrase, religious. And so they weren't top of the line when it came to that.
And I think it's part of the reason why, you know, probably why those folks, you know,
like, you know, Pharisees and such did balk at that so much, just because there was no way that, you know, the Messiah would put together this kind
of... One time when they were doing miracles, they said, these are unlearned and ignorant men. Mm-hmm. That's how they saw them. They said, "What? How are these doing it? They're unlearned and ignorant men." So a lot of times, that's about the biggest slam you could make, to say, these are a bunch of losers. And how in the world are they doing anything to impact their world, to make each other better, to make other people better? Yeah. How are they doing this? Because they're unlearned and ignorant men. And that's like playing on the baseball team I played on.
Yeah, and I think it's the whole like foundation of what God did when he sent his son. His greatness came from literally, I mean, nothing, right? And then you look at it and they thought, like, how could greatness come from, you know, even that they even said, like, what good, you know, could come out of where Jesus was from, like, and so I think that
come out of Galilee.
Yeah. What good?
Nazareth.
Yeah, and so I think that's just part of the amazing thing about it. I love that you brought that up. Is that even now? I think like if you expected Jesus to walk into the room, I think we have like a completely different vision in our minds of what that would look like if he actually did.
Well, if you take a look at some of the pictures of what a Middle Eastern man looked like back in that culture, it's nothing like what you see with the Breck shampoo guy on television. On pictures that show Jesus like this. He didn't look anything like that.
Yeah, reference there.
You know,
I'm pretty sure there was a bottle of that in my grandma's bathroom.
Probably.
Yeah.
So the idea that he was this successful looking. I mean, we even are told that they looked at him with kind of some disdain. You know, there was no form or comeliness. I love that phrase in the King James, comeliness, which means good looking. There was nothing good looking about him. There was nothing celebrity about him. You know, he looked just like a normal Middle Eastern man did back then. And so there was nothing about that drew them. There was other things. One thing I thought about just now as we were talking was I enjoyed playing with the other guys I played with. That was kind of interesting to me, is when I think back on the individual players I played with, I remember them with fondness. Not because we were good as a team or that we were knocking people out, but there were other guys that would play. They were playing hard. They were doing their best. I remember the one pitcher we had was a year older than me, and he had three speeds to his pitch: slow, slower, and slowest. You know what I'm saying? But I watched him baffle big players. I mean, these guys would come up, these big old mammoth guys with these bats from these other real well-oiled teams, I call it. And he would strike them out, you know. And Monroe was somebody that just blew our minds. You know, he just would throw that ball in there, but somehow he would do it. And so I loved those kind of moments. I loved catching Tim in my senior year when he was a freshman and to watch his career go on. Mm-hmm. He actually played with my brother, your uncle Daryl, later on when Daryl was playing, and they went into the state playoffs. Do you know, soon after I left, they started going to the state playoffs.
Powerhouse.
Right. But I think it's interesting too what you mentioned there about enjoying that team, and it's like you know, the Bible doesn't explicitly use the word, I don't know that it explicitly uses the word teamwork, at least not in any traditional translations, I guess. But like, you know, but in that vein, it's one of the reasons I think, you know, Paul spent a lot of time talking in 1 Corinthians about, you know, the body of Christ, and even made that, you know, that exact metaphor.
That's right.
Is because, you know, you throw a pitch, you know, with your arm, with your hand, but you really can't throw a pitch without legs. That's right. You know, it's the whole thing that he was, you know, that Jesus was putting together. He did the same thing, you know, when he pulled his disciples, and everybody thought that was just like a crack team of people that's, you know, not going to get anything. But he pulled guys together that eventually, you know, were able to act as a body, as a unit, and of course then, you know, founding the church, you know, to do the same thing.
And they changed the world.
Absolutely.
But not necessarily in their lifetime.
Right. Man.
Not necessarily in their lifetime. They changed the world, but not necessarily in their lifetime. And the fact that God entrusted in the person of Jesus, entrusted those guys with that message is absolutely astounding.
And even up until the time that he, even up until his death, they were still blowing it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, right. I mean, you know, obviously everybody knows about Peter. Yeah. It was like the same thing.
And, they all left him.
Yeah. And, right. Yeah. But I'm saying the famous, yes, you know, yeah, kind of story about Peter. Right, but like, right, also, you know, it was, I think it was Peter and James and John with him in the garden, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm, kind of leading up to things. And, you know, he asks them to keep watch and they fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And he literally, he says to Peter afterwards, was like, literally, mm-hmm, you guys could not sit watch for 1 hour, like, with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's mm-hmm, they were still making mistakes all the way up to that point.
Yeah.
And then he was gone soon after. And those guys that were making, you know, that were doing that stuff days before were still the same guys, yeah, you know, that made everything happen, mm-hmm, you know, that helped make everything happen. It's just astounding.
So it's really kind of cool, because I told you guys in a text today when we were talking about baseball that Mickey Mantle, whose number I wore, number 7, and I together have 537 home runs. Together we have 537. Now, I allowed Mickey to have 536 of those 537, and that's very gracious of me,
kind.
I think.
Very kind.
Actually, he did it before I hit my one, but I added on to his total. What I'm saying is that when we connect ourselves to Jesus, when we connect ourselves to Jesus, you talk about making somebody better.
Yeah.
You talk about enhancing that. You talk about that. And so that's why I love to get with other leaders. And many of the leaders that I have led and led with and that have led me were people that at one time were not seen as the most successful people in life. That's not who I've been working with. That's not who I've been drawn to. That's not who I've been. I grew up a little South Georgia boy, a little Mennonite boy that dressed funny, looked funny. We were always kind of weird, and we were weird compared to even in any kind of culture we went into. We were in America, and there we were, and yet Jesus can choose to take somebody like that, a boy that was scared out of his mind to listen to the news during the Vietnam War because it would keep me up at night, mm-hmm, and all this, and I ended up working in prisons. You know, without fear, I mean, it doesn't even make sense to me.
Right.
I've worked in cities. I've worked in this. I've lived in all kinds of different places. And so he can take somebody, a fearful little boy like me, who many people say he was a nice boy, but he wasn't he was not who they would have said, now there's a successful person. You know, they would not have said that. Now, in high school, I had good grades. I did some of that stuff. And so there were some people that said, well, you know, maybe he will be.
But you look at that and say, that's not who he's going to send into some of the darkest places.
That's correct. That's correct. That's not who we would think.
And he doesn't care what everybody else is thinking, you know, right, about us or, you know, or about other people.
It's like if you think that you're not in a place where you can do work for the kingdom, mm-hmm, it's like what we were just talking about, then look at the people that Jesus handpicked himself,
right,
you know, when he was here on
earth.
If
you're only hitting
and even one, is handpicking now.
Yeah,
if you're like only that, hitting absolutely one home run, i.e. success in your career, but you hook up with Jesus who knows how to hit home run after home run after home run after home run, you'll be proud to be identified. Proud in the right sense of that word. You'll be proud to be. And then let me just tell you this. When I look at this, it may seem crazy to y'all. I still have it. I'm proud of it. Still have my yearbook. I'm proud of it. I'm still proud of the pictures. And when I look back at my life, and I look back at the times when God used me. And together we hit a home run. I know they're just not in my strength because I don't hit home runs in my own strength. I'm not that strong. And that is a blessed experience to look back on it and say, I got to participate. And I got to participate on a team where somebody was hitting home runs, but it wasn't me, but I was a part of it. And he used me to help hit home runs, but actually they were his home runs because all I had to do was swing the bat and he took care of the rest. All I had to do was run the bases. All I had to do was glove the ball. All I had to do was throw down the second. All I had to do was throw from deep short. And I realized that that is a sense of reward, a sense of fulfillment, and a sense of, man, it was cool to have done that. So I played on a losing team. And in the kingdom of God, in this kingdom of the world, we're seen as a losing team. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in church don't want to admit to that, but we're seen as a losing team. You guys are losers. You're not going anywhere. You're worshiping God for what? You don't have all the nicest things. You don't have this. You don't have that, perhaps. And so we don't fall into the trap of saying, I must be successful to be successful in the kingdom. No, I will be successful in the kingdom when I'm connected to the King who makes me successful.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. We said we weren't going to preach on.
I know we said that.
Sometimes we do. Sometimes
my bad. But it's called preacher in the hat.
It's not called preaching in the hat.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
True.
Exactly. So,
thanks for correcting.
Yeah,
no apologies for the preaching right
absolutely
there.
That was good. So. No, I love it, and thank you for that. That's just like it, I mean it's. It's really a beautiful metaphor. I mean, to be quite honest. So, if you're not sure what to do, you step up to the bat. You step up to bat, swing the bat. Jesus will take care of the rest.
Yep,
so,
that's right.
For Derek and Steve, Chris behind the cameras, I'm Eric. This has been Preacher in the Hat. We'll see you next time.